Hello, and welcome to episode 48 of Speak Beastie for November 5th, 2017.
I'm Shannon.
I'm Megan.
I'm Ariel. And that's all of us for this episode.
There we are.
Gang's all here.
We don't have any, like, fun announcements.
We're just here.
Yeah.
Still.
We're all still here. Yeah.
They haven't fired... Well, they have fired us many times.
If you haven't been fired, you haven't really been a host, you know?
That's true.
Yeah.
But somehow we're still kicking.
Yeah.
Aaron's engaged. By the
way.
That's
true. Congratulations, Aaron.
Congrats, Aaron.
We only communicate to Aaron through this podcast, actually.
Yep. No. Hopefully he's listening to hear our congrats.
I still talk to him. I mean, not to say that y'all don't. I just meant, like...
I didn't actually say congrats to him on Facebook when I saw it.
Wow.
But I said it on the podcast, so...
I said congrats to him on Instagram, so...
Well, you're a better friend than I am.
Probably.
We were the OG3. I am still unhappy with Michael for that.
The Taylor-Poe?
Taylor-Poe.
So, after I kick myself because after we stopped recording, I asked him to do it in a Scottish accent, and it changed the entire thing. And then I made him do it again at MuggleNet Live, so a few people got to hear it then. But, like, just ask him to do it in a Scottish accent. It's not scary anymore. It's actually just funny and incredible. So.
Next time he's on, I would try to replicate it,
but I really can't.
Yeah, because you suck at impressions.
I do. That's true.
I tried to impersonate you. I know.
And it didn't work. I know.
You sounded really not like me at all.
I know.
It's okay. I'll still be your friend.
Thank you.
I won't hate you as much as I hate Michael for the Taylor-Poe. But then he reminded me about the Scottish version of it, so I'm like, okay, I can't be so mad at him.
Taylor-Poe. I can't do it. It's just, it's great.
That was good.
No, it was.
I was like, wait, Michael's here?
Thanks, but no.
Scottish Michael.
And now a message from our sponsors. Hey you! Yes you! The magical cats and dolls waving your wands like bean shooters in a caper. Looking to be on the up and up about Newt Scamander, famous zoologist and world traveler? No need for gossip at the juice joint, just tune your ears to Speak Beastie. And now for as little as one dragon dollar a month, you can make Speak Beastie the Neasles Meow. Support the show at patreon.com and suddenly you're the big cheese, the real McCoy, with exclusive access to swell sneak peeks, bloopers, and behind-the-scenes features. But wait, there's more! Sponsors can also beat their gums at the joint with access to the Speak Beastie Common Room on Facebook. Now you're really on the clean sweep, flyboy! Get a wiggle on to patreon.com/speakbeastie to learn more about becoming a sponsor today. It's the Billy Wiggs Knees, and how!
Now, for the Phoenix Register.
You're purposely saying it different!
My friggin'...
We need that on a t-shirt.
I know. It's like my... If I were in a TV show, it'd be like my catchphrase, but I'm on a podcast, so it's still my catchphrase, I guess. It's just, you know.
Just on a podcast?
Yeah, it's just like I feel like on a TV show, I'd like walk through the door all Kramer style and be like, and now for the Phoenix Register.
And the audience is like, yeah!
Like banana sandwich and just, oh my gosh, she said it! And I'd like look pointedly and break the... Who said this last time? Break the third wall.
I don't know.
That sounds familiar. What's in the Phoenix Register today?
So, we do actually have news this time. Thankfully. We were scrounging there for for a little while, but it is almost a year out from the movie, so I guess we can start expecting a little more here and there, or maybe we'll get a teaser here soon, because when the first movie came out, I think we got a teaser in the December before the movie came out.
Oh, you're right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I didn't even think about that.
Yeah, so...
I mean, worst case scenario, Dan will continue to entertain us with his Instagram. So
yeah, true. Yeah, that's the best worst case scenario that I've ever heard. So
true.
Yeah, but Fantastic Beast news, not related to the movie, but still Fantastic Beasts. The Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them Illustrated Edition will be released on November 7th, which is just 2 days after this episode comes out. So some images came out from the Graphorn and the Snallygaster. If you go to the MuggleNet article, you will see them. I think the Graphorn looks a bit different than what he or she looked like in the movie. And the Snallygaster, I don't remember seeing. I don't think it was in the movie, but it's a part bird, part reptile creature. Once believed to be a kind of dragon, which it looks almost like a pelican with a lizard tail.
So, it looks like a dinosaur, which is funny because birds evolved from dinosaurs. So maybe it's just like midway through its evolution.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so these are pretty interesting drawings. And then the Graphorn, I'm trying to think, looked a little less, I don't know if severe is the word I'm looking for here, but do you get what I'm saying? Like, these drawings look very, they make them look evil. Nothing against the artist.
I think it looks kind of like an armadillo.
Yeah. They just...
Well, the one in the movie was the one that the baby walks up and everyone's like, oh.
Yeah.
So they're kind of endearing in that way. I mean, they have, like, weird faces, but the way they're presented is very, like, cute.
Yeah. I think it's the teeth and the eyes from both of these animals. The way they've been drawn, they just make them look very, like, rrr.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. That'll definitely be interesting to see once it's on shelves, because every artist has a different take on what they think something's going to look like. So,
Pottermore is sort of implying that the Snallygaster is a distant relation to the Acme.
Hmm.
Is that just because they're both birds?
It does not go into any further detail. So, who's to say?
All birds are related. Pierre is a Snallygaster.
Oh.
Whoa.
Anyway, this is not a Pierre podcast.
It could be.
Speak, Pierre.
Bonjour.
Oh, Pierre.
So this next bit of news is more on the rumor side. A lot of people have been trying to figure out where Fantastic Beasts, the sequel, has been filming. And, that's not going to be super easy. It's not like people are out there like, hey, we're filming Fantastic Beasts right now. Like, come over and watch us. Because it's always been super under wraps. But two fans do think they have caught wind of some possible filming. Emma Causer and her son Jacob. They were suspecting something was up when crews were setting up among the beautiful Gothic architecture of Highgate Cemetery. So apparently neighbors had been informed by Warner Brothers and Triton Films that the cemetery would be used for a location for an unidentified film. And they apologized for all the equipment and generators being brought into the very old Victorian burial ground. So most people didn't know anything about the film. Workers from the cemetery had to sign contracts to agree not to discuss it. And Causer had taken a tour the weekend before and noticed the activity. But she said The clues were Warner Brothers and Triton Films and the addition of a black column by the Egyptian Avenue and the sign, excuse me if I butcher this, Les Prévôts de Bassarode. I tried. Added above one of the vaults in the Circle of Lebanon. My son thinks it must be Fantastic Beasts. The new one is set partly in France, so it makes sense. Triton Films hasn't responded to these claims, so again, a bit rumory, but who knows? Someone could be right, and that's why, you know, there's no comment from anyone, or, you know, there's so much secrecy surrounding this location. And does anyone actually know what that means that she said?
Well, I think it's a name.
Okay. Yeah, I put it in Google Translate, and it said the Prévôt of Bassarode.
Oh, okay. Well, good.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I was thinking...
It would make sense for it to be a name.
Yeah. Yeah, I was thinking my...
It's whoever's buried there.
I know my French doesn't extend very far, but I was thinking I'd never actually seen those words before, so a name would make sense.
But, it's in North London, so I guess that also would make sense.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Because even when they're filming for, quote, New York, they, you know, never actually went to New York, so...
Yeah. It's pretty far north of, like, main London. It's up by Hampstead Heath.
Yeah.
I think I've been there.
Ooh.
I think I went there with my class. I was just looking at the name and I was like, wait, Highgate Cemetery. Yeah, I think we went there. It's, like, huge.
Yeah.
It's a Karl very Marx big cemetery.
Karl Marx is buried there.
Yep.
And
yep,
so is George Michael.
Wow. Wait.
But you're not allowed to visit George Michael's grave. It's in a private part of the mm-hmm. cemetery. I'm looking at their website.
Wait, George Michael's dead?
That's what it says. Like, didn't he die recently?
Like from Wham?
No, he died like a year ago. Maybe even less. Right? Yeah. December 2016.
Oh. He was one from 2016. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Gosh.
It was like at the same
everyone in 2016.
That was like the same week as like Carrie Fisher and
yeah,
Debbie Reynolds.
Jesus.
So it was a pretty intense week.
Oh, I'm really upset. I'm like I'm living sorry. In this world thinking he's still alive. Damn,
he's
I was
not.
I
they got George Eliot.
sorry,
and Douglas Adams.
I need a moment, I think.
And some other people I don't know. There are a lot of war graves at that cemetery as well. Most from World War I, but over 30 from World War II. So maybe that's some sort of tie-in. I don't know, or maybe it's just a nice looking place to film stuff.
How did George Michael do? I'm sorry.
I did not realize that this was news.
I didn't realize it was news either.
Oh, Douglas Adams.
2016 was just a massacre. Took everyone. Okay. Well.
But yeah, Karl Marx. He's pretty famous.
But he's been dead. It's not news well, yeah. to me.
Karl Marx is dead.
What? No. Oh my god, his
George
grave.
Eliot who's next.
Oh god. If you look up Karl Marx's grave, this is literally so off topic, but it's so creepy. He's like the carving of his face is on it.
That's what I want.
And it's really disturbing me. Happy Halloween. Patrick Caulfield, his
what?
His gravestone is like the words the word dead. Like the letters are carved into it. So his gravestone just says dead.
Mood.
Which is kind Mood. Of amazing. I don't know who he is, but I like his gravestone. Well, I look forward to seeing Karl Marx's grave in Fantastic Beasts 2.
They're making it French. They're not making it Highgate Cemetery.
I hope
unless it's they're inventing a person that they need to go to the Highgate Cemetery, graves. And they happen to be French.
They're going to see graves.
Graves by the grave.
That's so funny.
Oh my god.
Watch, this is like a completely different movie, and it has nothing to do with this.
Probably.
It's a George Michael documentary. Okay, so a new image was released from Fantastic Beasts to tease Newt's book launch party in the film, which, as we know, the first film took place before he published the book, so we can safely assume that this second movie will take place when his book has just been published, because the caption from the tweet that accompanied this picture said, "A newly published author must have a book launch party. Newt Scamander has been busy." Okay, so the sign looks like it's in a bookstore window. It says the launch party is taking place Saturday, March 19th, 1927, at Flourish and Blotts in Diagon Alley, just a few months after the first Fantastic Beasts film takes place. Of interest, March 19th, 1927 was in fact a Saturday. We all know that dates in the Harry Potter series don't always line up with days of the week, but could still mean something. Hopefully we'll see.
Thanks, Mina Lima, for getting that one right.
Thanks, Mina Lima.
They tried. But hopefully we'll see something. I don't know. I know a lot of the stuff that they put out could just be, like, teasers, not actual plot points or anything.
It's just going to be in a window.
Yeah, like, they're just hyping up the film with little, like, marketing stuff. And, you know, this is just...
Well, I like that it says Obscurus Books.
Yeah.
Because I was like, is that ever going to be acknowledged that, like, it's some sort of publishing thing named after Obscurus?
Yeah.
I hope that is, like, acknowledged and, like, explained. But
maybe it's his little publishing company that he, like, his imprint.
Yeah. The first edition of Fantastic Beasts was commissioned back in 1918 by Mr. Augustus Worm of Obscurus Books. Who was kind enough to ask me, Newt, whether I would consider writing an authoritative compendium of magical creatures for his publishing house.
Yay!
Cool.
Do we think we're going to see a launch party? And Newt being really awkward at a launch party? Like, standing in the corner with his glass of water.
I hope so.
And everyone's like, Mr. Scamander.
And I hope that he invites Tina, and it's like, so much awkwardness.
Yeah.
Oh my god. We actually do have a comment about that in the Owl Post.
Whoa!
Yeah.
Let's hear it.
Segue right on in there.
Nice.
Nice.
So, in the Owl Post today, Majolaine Martin from the Common Room, I'm really sorry, I probably ruined your name, said... The date. I think I can recall they said the movie will take place during the summertime, am I right? 19th of March is more spring than summer, so the launch party in London could be at the beginning of the movie before they travel to Paris a few months later. And then Igor chimed in with, or at the end.
I chime in.
So that could be like a fun way to open the film. Like, it would tie it nicely back to the first one. But you'd be in a completely different place, and like, there would be.
Well, yeah, I could see it like a kind of opening montage.
Yeah.
Ooh.
That covers a few months, and it could be in there.
That would be good.
Of everyone being lonely and awkward.
Yeah, or a nice little upbeat ending, too.
Previously on Fantastic Beasts.
That's what you missed on Glee.
That's what you missed on Beasts.
Yeah. Oh, goodness. That would be, all this speculation. It's deja vu. Because I remember when the first movie came out and we were like, wow, we were wrong about so much.
We were wrong about everything.
we guessed,
did not know what the plan
was. Yeah. We guessed a couple things. Yeah.
And then Aaron was sitting over there like, I guessed all the Beast, basically. And we were like, well, screw you.
Yeah.
Sorry, Aaron.
Well, it's interesting because, like, with the first movie, we knew he was looking for his beasts, but that wasn't really the plot.
Yeah,
and then
right?
with this one, I still don't know what the plot is. Grindelwald escapes.
And there's a circus.
And there's a circus.
Apparently.
And a graveyard. Maybe.
Maybe.
Maybe. And Karl Marx is there.
Another comment we got in the outpost from the common room is from Alex Lauder, who made a couple of really good comments. We're using the other one for main discussion, I believe. But in this one, she says, when Queenie is using her legilimens powers on Newt, Newt says of Leta Lestrange, neither of us really fit in at school. I never noticed that before, but I think it further confirms we might have another Sirius Black situation, a family of Slytherins with a rogue Gryffindor, or perhaps in this case, a Hufflepuff?
Hmm.
It seems legit.
Seems legit.
All right, we're stamping it as canon.
All right, moving on.
Canonical, done.
We have three legits. We can now move on. That would be interesting, though, because we are going to be seeing his brother in some manner. We don't know if it's through a flashback or what, but I think I personally would like to see that, because it wasn't ever really as explored in the movies as it was in the books.
I would kind of like to see, though, like, a Slytherin that's, like, good.
Yeah.
And, like, a Slytherin-Hufflepuff friendship.
Yeah.
Do we not have any good cool. Slytherins in Harry Potter?
Nope, no good Slytherins.
Really?
I mean, not really. I mean, like, Slughorn was...
He was alright.
He was very self-serving. I don't know. And
he, at the end, though, he kind of redeemed the whole...
He wasn't evil.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, we could talk about Cursed Child, but
no, we can't.
Don't.
We could, but we won't.
Merlin was a Slytherin.
In Cursed Child, or like J.K. Rowling said so?
J.K. Rowling says.
Was Merlin in Cursed Child?
No. Just Merlin historically.
I'm just kidding.
I blocked a lot of that out of my memory. So
I wish Merlin was in Cursed Child. That would be an interesting plot.
I think it has enough interesting plots. It's all good.
Yeah, no. There wasn't really, like, a Slytherin who was, like, good.
Well, that's stupid.
I guess Rita Skeeter was a Slytherin. I mean,
she was no good.
But she wasn't evil.
Well, our bar is pretty low here.
Andromeda Tonks.
Oh. Okay.
So, there we go. There's one.
Yeah, she was good.
Yeah.
Cool.
All right, we don't need any more good ones.
That's enough.
I think, though, like, so, I don't know. There are a lot of interesting ways that you could go with Leta Lestrange, because I think it'd be cool to have, like, her just still be a Slytherin, but be friends with Newt, and she still doesn't fit in. But it would also be cool to see a Hufflepuff in a family of Slytherins. That'd be very weird.
Yeah.
I get the feeling they're going to go down this road, but I want just a platonic relationship.
Yes.
I worry that they're going to shoehorn a love triangle, and I'm like, let's not.
Or even, like, maybe just, like, oh, they kind of dated in school or, like, had crushes on each other, but I don't want any of that to still be a thing.
Yeah.
I don't want a love child. We know that he marries Tina.
And maybe they're trying to, like, I don't know, build up suspense by doing that for people who do that know that. Like, because my parents, they're watching. They don't know. They don't know what's going to happen. They don't know who he's going to end up with. But it's still, it would just be so refreshing if they were honestly just friends, just two kindred spirits who found each other and were like, hey, let's be friends and, you know,
yeah,
live on the island of misfit toys together. So
Yeah.
That's how the movies should end. They all move to the Island of Misfit Toys. Okay. So, our main discussion this week is inspired by the other half of Alex's comment, where she talked about rewatching Fantastic Beasts, and she said in the comment,
wait a minute,
the friggin' Deathly Hallows symbol is everywhere. In Newt's case, on his little workshop when he's talking to Queenie, the window in the second Salemers house right before Credence kills Mary Lou, so much symbolism. And then obviously we know, like, Graveswald, whatever we call him, had the Deathly Hallows symbol on a necklace that he gave to Credence. So I rewatched the movie.
Because you're a dedicated host.
Yes.
We love you for it.
But honestly, this is only the second time I've watched it all the way through.
Wow.
So I noticed the times that, like, Alex was talking about, and then some other times where I was like, that kind of looks like the Deathly Hallows symbol. Like, none of these were, like, that is, like, the, like, none of them were, like, the necklace. It was, like, this is a triangle line circle shape. It's very subtle. That's, like, I wrote down, the only thing I really wrote down that Alex didn't mention was, I was looking at the second Salemers, like, banner, and I was like, that kind of looks like the Deathly Hallows symbol, because it's, so it's hands breaking a wand, with, like, a sun behind them, and then all these, like, light rays. And so it's kind of this triangle shape with a circle and a line down the middle. And I also think it's interesting that, like, a wand is being broken instead of, like, the Elder Wand is down the middle. But, so I was wondering, like, why is the Deathly Hallows symbol everywhere? Other than just as, like, an Easter egg. Assuming that they did all these on purpose. Because they're very subtle. And, like, triangles and circles and lines are shapes.
But Joe was involved.
So. Yeah. And, you know, when you're making a film, everything that you put in a shot has to have a purpose.
Even though it wasn't in the films, it was in the books when Crumb gets all offended and upset with Mr. Lovegood wearing the Deathly Hallows symbol at the wedding. So, obviously, Grindelwald was known for using, like, you know, Nazis and shit, if we're going back to that. You know, it'd be like someone having a swastika on them, essentially. And while, you know, one person knows that swastika and the Deathly Hallows symbol started off one way, some asshole came along and took it and made it into something bad. So, and that's putting it very lightly. but it just, I think they're really trying to hone in on the fact that the symbol means something else entirely in this era, as opposed to, you know, the Harry Potter films back, you know, years ago, and all these people who are having Deathly Hallows symbol tattoos on them now. I think, like, oh, it's going to be interesting, these next few films for you.
Well, and that's, like, it got me thinking, how much is Grindelwald's search for the Deathly Hallows going to come into play in the movies? Because we haven't really talked about that.
Yeah.
You know, that was a big thing he was doing.
Yeah.
But, and he got the Elder Wand. Okay, so I wrote down each of the three and where they are and which brother they came from. So the Elder Wand was Antioch, I think that's how it's pronounced.
The Holy Hand Grenade of Antioch.
Antioch Peverell. And so that, like, Grindelwald presumably has by the time in the movies. He stole it from Gregorovitch. The wand doesn't appear in the first movie. He's using what is presumably Graves' wand.
Huh.
And I was wondering where the hell the Elder Wand is. Where the heck the Elder Wand is. Where is the Elder Wand? Is basically the question.
Does Dumbledore have it?
Not yet.
No. Dumbledore doesn't get it until he defeats
Grindelwald. In 1945.
Killer big duel.
Are we sure he has it at this point from Grigorovich?
Well, I was wondering
he was like
that
a
because
teenager.
I think.
No, wait.
But that's how the movie shows
it.
Yeah.
In the books, it's I think it says a young man. So still probably before.
Oh, it's so tough.
He is Johnny Depp. But, like, it doesn't say his age or really the timeline in relation to when he knew Dumbledore.
Yeah.
This is so...
And I honestly don't even remember if it says young man. I'm pretty sure it does, though. But
young man.
It's golden hair.
So if he does have the Elder Wand, but he's not carrying it with him while he's Graves, like, what do we think he did with it?
Yeah, he's gotta have, like, hidden it somewhere,
yeah.
Right?
Because I don't feel like he would trust it with anyone.
Keeping it safe.
Yeah, he wouldn't trust it with someone.
No.
So then I don't know where you'd hide it.
In.
And why doesn't he just carry it?
Would he
Unless he is carrying it and it's been, like, confiscated by Makuza.
Would he have trusted Dumbledore with it if they were friends at the time and, like, were both interested in these things?
I don't think they were friends at this point.
Well, not at this point, but unless he got it while he was still friends with Dumbledore.
Then why would Dumbledore be like, he's not my friend anymore, but I'll hold on to it for him. Like, you are
That's
not going to let
him
know.
I forgot that there was like a chunk of time in between when they stopped being friends and when they dueled. Like, it wasn't...
Yeah.
Like, I had a backpack of this girl's that I stopped being friends with, and I was like, yard sale.
So Dumbledore sells the Elder Wand at a yard sale.
Please. That would be amazing. Oh, goodness.
And so, yeah, either he's hiding it somewhere or, like, he had
it. Yard sale.
Yeah, either either it's been sold at a yard sale, and he's got to go track it down again. Or he has it, and now, like, it would have probably been confiscated by Makuza, and he takes it back when he breaks out, I guess, at the beginning of the movie.
Or maybe he transfigured it into a stupid hairdo and is just wearing it on his
head.
Hey,
Colin Farrell worked that hairdo. Johnny Depp did not.
No, it's the mustache. Oh,
it's the Johnny Depp is what it is. It's
Johnny Depp is the Elder Wand.
Gosh.
It's just sewn into the lining of the coat.
Yeah.
He wouldn't have that in prison either, I guess.
It's been
just
transfigured
let him keep the coat
into like,
prison. They're like
something,
please.
Something like a portkey, like something that no one cares about, like a piece of gum or something. He just keeps it in his pocket. He's like, this is my gum.
Yeah.
No,
he's just chewing on it.
Offered my gum to someone and they're chewing the Elder Wand now.
Well, he doesn't share his gum.
Well, if we're talking about him transfiguring it, why wouldn't he just transfigure it to look like Graves' wand and then he was using it?
That makes
Can you
more
transfigure
sense.
Wands, though?
I don't know.
I don't know either.
It seems like you shouldn't be able to, but... Yeah.
But you can transfigure people. Like...
Yeah.
Why would wands be an exception?
Yeah.
Because I feel like... I feel like this is something like Arthur Weasley would have to deal with. Like, you know, people transfigure random objects into wands to mess with muggles and then they get hurt. That's just where my mind went to.
Well, I guess you'd need another wand to transfigure the wand.
That's true.
And so... And why would you transfigure your own wand? Because then you might not be able to transfigure it back.
Right. Unless it's the Elder Wand and you're trying to hide it.
Yeah, and you can do wandless magic, which we know Grindelwald can do.
I hope he just, like, dug a hole somewhere and just buried it and, like...
Probably.
He dug
it. It's in that mansion he attacked at the beginning of the movie. It's in the cemetery.
Yes.
Oh my god, it's in a tomb.
It's in Karl Marx's tomb.
Oh my god.
Case closed.
We skipped so much.
Thanks for listening.
Shortest episode ever.
And then, of course, that doesn't even get into the question that we've come up before, which is, like, Tina disarmed him, so what is the truth about who's the master of the Elder Wand?
Well, I feel like he would be using Graves' wand right then, so, you know, when you're not using your wand, you're not at, like, full strength.
But, like, when Harry pulled wands that weren't the Elder Wand out of Draco's hand, then Harry became the master of the Elder Wand.
Even though he had never touched it.
Yeah, and so, well, I think what we've talked about before with, like, Tina is that technically when the Swooping Evil, like, tied up Graves, he dropped the wand, and then Tina Accio'd the wand, and so it's like, does that count as her disarming him? Or is Newt disarming him? Or the Swooping Evil is disarming him.
The Swooping Evil is the master of the Elder Wand.
The Swooping Evil is the master of the Elder Wand. So, yeah, it's very complicated. The Elder Wand is very complicated, and...
And it may or may not be gum.
It may or may not be. But I presume we will see it in the films. So, then the other two Deathly Hallows... are the Resurrection Stone, which was Cadmus's, and the Invisibility Cloak, which was Ignotus's. The Resurrection Stone is presumably, at this time, in Marvolo Gaunt's possession, if I mathed right.
Wow.
Because...
it was in the ring, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. It's in the ring, and... Marvolo Gaunt is still alive in the 20s because that's when Tom Riddle's born.
Mm-hmm.
So he's just holding on to it.
He's just being a charming fellow.
Yeah, and then the Invisibility Cloak is just with the Potter family because it's been passed down through the generations, possibly with Henry Potter, who I know is like, the head Potter at the time because he sat on the Wizengamot from 1913 to 1921, and he's Harry's great-grandfather. And then his son is Flemont Potter.
Flemont, I thought? James. Or no?
Flemont? Flea?
Flemont.
Flea Potter.
Fle-a-mon.
Fle-a-mon.
But so he probably has the invisibility cloak. So I was like... We know how Grundy tracked down the Elder Wand was he probably just followed the trail of people who, like, killed each other over it.
Mm-hmm.
But how is he planning on tracking down the Resurrection Stone and the Invisibility Cloak when they never even, like, left the original families? I mean, we know that he doesn't track them down, but I wonder if that is and has anything to do with, like, why he's traveling around the world. He's trying to figure it out. Even though they're both still in England.
I don't know if I've just, like, never thought of this before, but...
Mm-hmm.
I didn't realize that two of the three Deathly Hallows stayed with descendants of different houses.
Yeah.
Huh. Oh. I'm sure other people have realized that, but I didn't even know George Michael was dead earlier, so... I am not quick on the uptake, as it is clear.
It's been a long day for Ariel.
It really has, though.
She just found out about George Michael.
Really has, yeah. And if you don't know about George Michael either, then I'm sorry that we broke the news to you.
Sorry.
Yeah.
So Slytherin and Gryffindor have two of the three Deathly Hallows, and we're not sure if Grindelwald ever really knew where they were or was even trying to find them, if he just knew about the Elder Wand, if he even knew it was called the Elder Wand, if it was he was just like, oh well, this is powerful, I must have it.
I'm pretty sure he knew about all of them, and he knew about the Deathly Hallows, well, because he used the symbol, but I think he wanted to be Master of Death, but I don't know if that like lasted past his friendship with Dumbledore. Like, maybe by this point in the movies he didn't care about that anymore because he had the Elder Wand, but then he's still using the Deathly Hallows symbol, but like, maybe it's just because that's become
synonymous. I mean, like, with him, when I say he didn't know about them, like,
yeah,
their, I mean, he didn't know who they were.
Yeah,
or even if they existed. Because I feel like, if anything, people definitely knew the wand existed.
Like, he probably thought, because it had, like, other names, other legends.
Yeah, because he probably thought, like, okay, well, there's the Deathly Hallows, and then there's this wand. Maybe the other stuff is just to embellish the story or whatever.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Because he definitely would have cared about the wand the most.
Yeah.
He wants power.
Yeah.
Dumbledore wanted the stone because family, dead, whatever.
Whatever.
Whatever. He wanted to bring George Michael back.
Because he's never going to dance again.
Oh, no.
It's true.
Guilty feet have got no rhythm.
I kind of wish that George Michael was alive. No, I kind of... I mean, I do, but
yeah.
That's not where that sentence was going at the beginning. I kind of wish that we got to see, I mean, obviously there are four more movies, but wow. That we would get to see more of, like, Grindelwald searching for the Deathly Hallows, because that's interesting. But, like, obviously he already has one and he's not going to find the other two, and we know that.
Yeah.
Like, we know that he's not even gonna, like, have one of the other two for, like, a minute. Unless, like, he tracks down Henry Potter and we get, like, a showdown there.
Henry Potter just reminds me of, like, my dad trying to talk about Harry Potter but not knowing anything about it.
Right?
Like,
it's weird.
It just doesn't sound right.
You're like, that's not right.
You know that Henry Potter? No.
No, Dad. It's Harry Potter.
Harry Potter. We're so Harry American.
When you see that, have you heard about those books? Harry Potter.
No, I've never heard of those.
I think they're based on movies.
Are they good?
I don't know.
I don't like to read.
Me neither.
Oh my gosh.
End scene.
End scene. Good job, everybody.
Way to go. The Deathly Hallows.
Yeah. I would love to see Marvolo God, but I feel like if Grindelwald ran into him and he had the Resurrection Stone, he'd just kill him really easily.
Yeah. Yeah.
And obviously that's not what happened. Not like Henry Potter, who should totally appear and have a big showdown.
I just picture him as, like, a hobo.
Yeah. Let's have, the invisibility cloak appear, and then, like, I don't know where I'm going with this. Something with the dummy guys, which is also invisible.
Yes.
It's basically where I'm going with this.
I like
the Debbie guy steals the invisibility cloak, so he's extra invisible.
Or does the invisibility cancel each other out?
Whoa.
And then you can just see him all the time.
Whoa. I would actually love to see the invisibility cloak and see more of the whole thing where, like, spells don't affect it.
Yeah.
Because they say that's a thing, but we never saw it in the books.
Wait, no, really. Is that why... They summoned it. They were like, Accio Cloak in Deathly Hallows. And it doesn't move. Do you remember that? When they show up in Hogsmeade, the Death Eaters try to summon the cloak. And Harry, like, grabs onto it, but it doesn't go anywhere.
Oh, yeah.
Is that why?
Yeah. Yeah, I guess so.
I never understood why. I was just like, sweet! I accept.
Yeah, that's why. Because I guess that's not really, it's not, like, explained that that's the cloak until...
Yeah.
After...
Spells don't affect it at all?
An inkling. I don't know if it's at all.
Because I feel like other people have been able to, like, take it from him. I don't know.
I think it's some sort of, like, protection. So maybe it just depends on the spell and, like, who's using it and stuff.
Maybe.
But I don't know. I can't think of any other time when someone cast a spell on it. And I guess it would be more like attack spells can't penetrate it. Because, like, obviously if, like, Avada Kedavra hits your t-shirt, still hits you and you're dead. But if it hits the invisibility cloak, it wouldn't.
It would be funny if Avada Kedavra didn't work when it hit clothes, so everybody could just walk around, like, bundled up, like, with ski masks on and stuff.
Spells don't go through clothes.
Can't get me.
That would be amazing. Just no spells work through clothes. You're like looking Harry's for walking a weak around spot.
In like a winter coat, a scarf, and
yeah.
Oh man.
You wrap a scarf around your wand so Harry can't expelliarmus it. Shall we move on?
So, for the time turner, I kind of fell into a wormhole earlier. I looked up March 19th, 1927 to see if anything particular had happened on that day that we could talk about. That was the date from the invite, the book launch party. And I found some information about the rise of Nazis in Berlin. It probably is going to have something to do with the plot, so I figured I would talk about that.
Nice.
Basically, this is like an overview of the mid to late 20s and early 30s in Berlin as it relates to Nazis. Joseph Goebbels basically gets off a train at age 29 on November 7th, 1926 in Berlin. At the time, the splinter group, known as the Nazis, well, the National Socialist German Workers' Party, the group led by Adolf Hitler had 49,000 members throughout all of Germany. It was in sad shape in the capital, where it could only boast a few hundred members. In a report written in October 1926, a party official wrote of the complete breakdown of the Berlin organization, which he described as a self-destructive, confused group that was almost beyond repair. So there's Nazis throughout Germany, but, like, what's supposed to be the powerhouse in Berlin is, like, falling apart. So at the end of the year, Goebbels rented a more acceptable office for the party on Lützowstrasse. He kicked the do-nothings and the troublemakers out of the party and called upon the remaining members to participate in various campaigns. He had been in the office for hardly a week before he got organized a march through the Neukölln district, a communist stronghold that devolved into a street riot. He wanted Hitler's party to show its colors in Berlin, which he described as the reddest city in Europe besides Moscow. On February 11th, 1927, the Nazi party meeting turned into a violent brawl between the two groups, the Social Democratic Party and the Communist Party of Germany. And they threw beer glasses and chairs and everything at each other.
Whoa.
And
slow down, guys.
I know.
Not the chairs.
The Goebbels team, which was the Social Democratic Party, wins. I don't know how you determine who wins a beer throwing thing, but they did.
They just threw it the best.
Yes. So then Goebbels turned Berlin into a violent laboratory for the future dictatorship, availing himself of the services of the uniformed Assault Division. Or SA. And then so in 1929, they start this whole thing where the Jews have to be eradicated because they're sort of like symbols of capitalism and communism and the stuff that they're all supposed to be against. So the Jews are to blame became their slogan. At the head of Berlin's Nazis, Goebbels chose Bernhard Weiss, the Jewish deputy chief of the city's police force, as a target of his anti-Semitic agitation. Young party members would sing satirical songs about this guy, and then the whole thing sort of snowballed. By December 5th of 1930, they went into a screening of All Quiet on the Western Front and released mice into the audience. And that obviously wasn't the worst thing they did, but that was how part of this started.
Wow.
And then on May 1st, 1927, Hitler spoke to them for the first time. Goebbels enjoyed Hitler's confidence and was moved to tears by his speech about space and the people. Goebbels couldn't fight in World War I because he had a deformed right leg.
Whoa.
Yeah, but he was really good at politics and, what do you call it? Not plagiarism, but it kind of sounds like plagiarism. Propaganda.
Yeah.
It doesn't sound anything like plagiarism.
Starts like, I don't know where you're going with this.
Is a G in it?
This is a fun fact. The Nazis started out by establishing seemingly harmless groups such as bowling, savings, and swimming clubs.
All right.
Oh, God.
Got those Goebbels to look
established
out for.
The newspaper Der Angriff, the attack, in July 1927, initially as a weekly, the subheading For the Oppressed Against the Exploiters, targeting working class readers. In 1929, the party, headed by Bandit-in-Chief Goebbels, as the communists called him, captured 5.8% of the vote for city council, securing 13 seats in the city's parliament, and now we start to get into trouble. Because they've got some,
and now we get into trouble.
Some seats in the government, etc. Berlin's Nazis waged a political war on two fronts. One front was against the Social Democrats and the established parties running the city and country. The other was against the communists, whose ranks swelled when people uprooted by the crisis were driven into their arms. They've got these two political parties, essentially, the ones that were throwing beer and stuff at each other before, and they're, like, not really on either side. Horst Wessel was a propagandist for the Nazis. He did a bunch of stuff. And then he died. He was a martyr. So everybody came to his funeral.
Mm-hmm.
And they were like, oh my god, this guy's dead. This is, we should all be Nazis now. All of these, like, elements came together in 1932 to allow the Nazi party to kind of gain traction. Because everybody was confused and fighting. And Goebbels was a conniving little POS.
Mm-hmm.
And he promised people the right to work and a socialist Germany that gives bread to its children once again, which awakened the hopes of the 31.3% of Berlin voters who voted for the Nazi Party in the last Reichstag election of March 1933. And that was kind of that. That's when everything kind of went to bits.
Oh, I thought you were going to
say this really is, like, happening throughout all of Fantastic Beasts.
Yeah. I mean, like, the dates are interesting because it's, like, exactly the time frame that we're kind of focused on.
Yeah. You know?
And we're about to go to Europe where this is all happening, so.
Yeah.
Hmm. So, to sum up, Nazis are bad, and. Mm-hmm.
Go punch a Nazi in the face.
Do it. They did some conniving little things in Berlin to get to their power.
They did and a few bad things, you know?
A few questionable moves were made, and then World War II happened, so.
Yeah.
That's where we at.
That concludes the episode. Not for the podcast question of the week. I don't even know what accent that is. Our podcast question is, do you think Grindelwald was on a search for all of the Hallows or was content once he found the wand? We'd love
also,
to hear.
Also, did you know George Michael was dead?
Sure. We're doing a poll on Twitter. You wait and see. I can't be the only one. We'd love to hear from you, so drop us an owl on any of our social media outlets or email us at speakthisday@gmail.com and leave us a review on iTunes. But remember, don't be a about it.
Ooh, snap. Find us on Twitter and Instagram at speakbeastie, facebook.com/speakbeastie, speakbeastiepodcast.tumblr.com. Support the show on Patreon at patreon.com/speakbeastie, and check out our website at speakbeastie.com.
And in case you didn't know, you're listening to Speak Beastie.
What?
I'm Shannon.
I'm Megan.
I'm Ariel. That's Carl. Never gonna dance again. Guilty feet have got no rhythm.